Right. Hello, everyone. So I have a song to play for Anne. Actually, it's for all of us, but it's for Anne. It's called The Song My Dog Wrote. So
I can't wait to get you up in the morning when the sun is shining bright. It's gonna be another day with you. We're gonna run and play and seize the day. There ain't nothing like chasing your cares away with you. Oh, with you. If you're down, I'll help you turn around. Nobody knows how much I love you. Nobody knows how much I care. There's a big old world. Let's get out there and live it. Walking next to you may seem to be just another little thing in the world you see, but the truth is it just means so much to me. Oh, I'm gonna wag my tail, gonna dig a bunch of holes. I don't know why, but I think it means I love you. If you're down, I'll help you turn around. Nobody knows how much I love you. Nobody knows how much I care. There's a big old world, let's get out there and live it. Nobody knows where the story goes. Nobody knows how much I love you. Nobody knows how much I care. There's a big old world. Let's get out there and live it. Nobody knows where the story goes. So don't worry all your life. I just wanna be your best friend. To bed at night, I'd like to curl up by your side and dream of another day with you. So good night.
I like that song. There we go. That was a good song, wasn't it? I think I have tears in my eyes. No, I know I have tears in my eyes. Pardon me for a second. Why cry? last night I was watching a Gunsmoke before I went to bed, and it was a story about a guy who felt very, very, very unworthy. I'm sure some of you guys can identify with that. And unfortunately, his wife didn't really love him. And so she was always telling him what a failure he was and how he wasn't worth anything. And finally, in the middle of the night, one night, he left her and went to Dodge, because you got to go to Dodge if it's Gunsmoke. And so he's walking around Dodge City trying to find some place to belong. And to make a long story short, right towards the end of the show, it's dark. He doesn't have any money. He's trying to find a place in the alley to curl up and sleep. And lo and behold, there's his dog. His dog came and found him. And he's so happy to see his dog. And then he sees Matt Dillon, who of course is the star. And he really admires Matt Dillon, because remember, he thinks he's really unworthy. And he thinks Matt Dillon is something. And so he just wants to tell Matt Dillon, I wish I was you. I wish I was like you. And so he goes up to Matt Dillon and says, "Can I talk to you?" And Matt Dillon says, "Sure." But then this bad guy jumps out and is going to shoot Matt Dillon. And so he jumps in front of the bullet to save Matt Dillon. And, of course, he dies. When he dies, his dog goes and curls up next to him and just lays there next to him. So so it's a dog day today. actually, we're here for the Tao Te Ching. And we're looking at number 24 today. And I will start with Derek Lynn. It says, those who are on tiptoes cannot stand. Those who straddle cannot walk. Those who flaunt themselves are not clear. Those who presume themselves are not distinguished. Those who praise themselves have no merit. Those who boast about themselves do not last. Those with the Tao call such things leftover food or tumors. They despise them. Thus, those who possess the Tao do not engage in them. So, standing on tiptoes, you know, it could be trying to make yourself look above everyone else, right? That could be standing on tiptoes. Straddling. Well, straddling makes me think of trying to be more than I am, you know, trying to make myself really wide. So we have making ourselves really tall. We have making ourselves really wide. Flaunting yourself, you know, making yourself look really, you know, when I think of flaunting, I think of a rooster, actually. You know how a rooster kind of walks around? Yeah, everybody's shaking their head, making, you know, I look really good, you know, making yourself look really good. Presume themselves. I'm going to have to look up presume here to see what's meant in this case with presume. I don't think I would ever say presume themselves, so I'm not sure. Well, there's a few definitions here. Suppose that something is the case, which is what I think presume means. So it could mean that I'm presuming I'm something I'm not, right? But the other one is to be audacious enough. You know, so that would be like being bold. But I'm going to say probably that presume themselves, those who presume themselves maybe to be something that I'm not, I think probably is what this means. Those who presume themselves are not distinguished. Those who praise themselves, right, go around telling everybody how good I am, what a good job I did, have no merit. And those who boast, I may praise myself as just in my own mind. To boast is when I go around and tell everybody else. When we really look at all of these options, standing on tiptoes, real tall, straddling, real wide, flaunting myself, presuming myself to be something I'm not, praising myself and boasting about myself. What all of those say to me is taking myself, of course, meaning the body, mind, personality, very seriously and needing it to be a certain way. In fact, you know, I would say that if I was doing these things, if this was a part of my personality, what it would really indicate is that I was hiding something else. And what I would be hiding is a deep sense of unworthiness. But it says, those with the Tao call such things leftover food or tumors. They despise them. Thus, those who possess the Tao do not engage in them. Despise is an interesting word. We had the word despise show up in a quote recently for the seven steps to awakening. And one person who is in the Gentle Healing 3 group wrote, is he asking us to judge? You know, because he's asking us to despise something. And I said, that's not the way, you know, I take it when a master uses the word despise. You know, although I can certainly understand the idea of judgment. But, you know, when I despise something, and I always think of chicken gizzard soup, I easily turn away from it. And so that's really how I take the word despise to mean is easily turn away from. You know, I remember there was a restaurant here. There still is a restaurant here called Rojas, but they've changed their menu. But once upon a time, they had chicken gizzard soup on their menu. And that was easy for me to not order. Right? That was easy for me to turn away from. I knew I didn't want chicken gizzard soup. So that's what despise means to me. So what this is saying is those who are aligned with the Tao, which would definitely also mean aligned with humility, it's very easy for them not to partake of these characteristics of making myself bigger than others or wider than others or flaunting myself or praising myself or boasting about myself or presuming myself to be something I'm not, right? And that's all there is to that particular verse. We may not spend the whole hour with that verse, but I guess what I would want to say is, if you notice yourself doing those things, what I would do is go home and practice root cause inquiry. Because I suspect there's a hidden problem there. And it might be helpful to find that hidden problem and expose that to the light. Because that's what's keeping you from being able to be natural. To me, humility and natural are the same thing. And these types of things, making myself bigger than, wider than, boasting, flaunting, presuming myself to be, all of that, those types of things are unnatural. So you would want to do a root cause inquiry to find out why you feel like you have to make yourself better than others or why you feel like you have to brag about yourself in front of others. So you could bring whatever is hidden to the light. And I'm going to go to Stephen Mitchell next and look at the same verse because he did change it a little bit, as he always does. It starts off the same, but then it's different. He says, he who stands on tiptoe doesn't stand firm. He who rushes ahead doesn't go far. He who tries to shine dims his own light. He who defines himself can't know who he really is. He who has power over others can't empower himself. He who clings to his work will create nothing that endures. If you want to accord with the Tao, just do your job, then let go. So some of that is similar. You know, you can see this standing on tiptoe again, trying to make myself bigger, taller than others. But instead of straddling, trying to make myself wider than others, he said, he who rushes ahead doesn't go far. And rushes ahead to me feels like to me getting ahead of guidance. That's what that really feels like, getting ahead of guidance. You know, sometimes, not sometimes, let me take that back, rewind, all the time. guidance gives us one step at a time. So when you receive guidance, you may receive guidance for one thing. And then, you know, certainly something else is going to unfold in some way or another from that, but sometimes it doesn't happen as quickly as the mind would like it to. You know, guidance doesn't give us a 5-year plan, for example. And so people want to fill in the gap the guidance isn't providing right now. And I think that's rushing ahead of the guidance. You know, you have to be able to kind of sit back and wait until you know your next step. So he who rushes ahead doesn't go far. He who tries to shine, this is like flaunting yourself, dims his own light. And then he who defines himself, that's like presumes himself, right? He who defines himself can't know who he really is. So we are here to discover who we really are. But if we are constantly defining ourselves, those definitions, who we believe we are, covers up who we really are. And that doesn't really matter whether I am telling you that I'm better than everybody else or whether I'm like the man in last night's Gunsmoke episode where I'm very, very unworthy and I can tell you how unworthy I am. Or anything in between. If I define myself in any way, then I can't know who I am. You know, what just appeared to me was a window, a clear window that allows you to see through the window and see who you really are. But, or maybe a mirror would be a better example than a window, allows you to see who you really are. But if you take some kind of crayon and color all these ideas all over that window or that mirror, you can't see the reflection. And that's what your definitions of yourself are. They're like crayon colorings on that window or on that mirror that keeps you from being able to see who you really are. It's interesting that Muji once said, and I think this is also in the Course in Miracles, that to perceive yourself as unworthy is arrogant. Because, you know, most people think of arrogance as being, I'm better than you. And we don't really think of seeing ourselves as unworthy as arrogance. But if you think of even unworthiness as coloring on that mirror, so instead of seeing your true reflection, who you really are, you're seeing who you presume yourself to be. But then you can see how that's actually arrogant. So we let go of arrogance by having no self-definitions. And of course, we all have self-definitions. So what that really means is we let go of arrogance by noticing and disbelieving our self-definitions. You know, it's a real challenge for people to let go of unworthiness or what I call the I am bad thought. I think it's one of the most difficult false beliefs we have to let go of. And you never know what key is going to unlock that puzzle for someone so that they can let it go. But maybe for some, it's just seeing that it's actually arrogant. You know, maybe because unworthiness, and if you think you're unworthy, you think it's a fact about you. But if you see it's arrogant to believe that and you have no desire to be arrogant, it might help you to let it go. If every time you notice you're telling yourself again what a loser you are or how lacking you are, how shameful you are, however you do that, if in a non-judgmental way, you know, of course, non-judgment has to be there. You just remind yourself, oh, this is arrogant. You know, I think I knew who I am rather than letting God show me who I am. You know, for some people that may help let go of some of the thoughts. So, he who tries to shine dims his own light. He who defines himself can't really know who he is. He who has power over others can't empower himself. That's an interesting one. Of course, having power over others. I mean, there may be a bit of truth to that. Depending on who you are, you may appear to have power over others. But I would say that to me, it seems more like an illusion. Even if you seem to be controlling others, my guess is, in most of them, there's a resistance to that, even if they behave in the way you order them to behave, because you have so much power. Within them, there's some kind of a resistance. You know, I saw a TV commercial for some show. I don't know what show it was, but it was a daughter and a father sitting in the front seat of the car together. And the daughter said to the father, "How was work today?" And the father looked real sad and he said, "Well, sometimes my boss has a way of making it seem like work." You know, so there's some of that resistance, right? I mean, again, at work, that particular father may do everything he's told, but there's a resistance there. So it's interesting because this says, he who has power over others can't empower himself. Well, if you have power over others, and if there's a natural resistance in them to that power, then you have to maintain that power. And if you maintain that power, then you're a slave to what you've created, which means you can't be empowered. Right? You have to keep that going, because obviously they're not doing it willingly. And so the second, you know, you lift up the reins and aren't controlling them, they may take off in different directions, not do what you want them to do. You haven't empowered them, you've controlled them. And now you have to control them, which takes up all your time and effort, so you can't empower yourself. So the best way to empower yourself is to empower others. I remember my dad sitting around the dinner table at one point, and some of you know he would pass on wisdom every now and then at the dinner table. And I remember one time he told me that you know, when you're a manager, the best thing to do with your employees as much as possible is to allow them to have their own ideas and do things their way. He says that where a lot of managers mess up is they think they always know the right way. And therefore, they're actually controlling, making everybody do things their way. And as we see, then the manager is a slave to their own controlling nature. My dad always said it's best to let people, you know, give them some freedom to have their own ideas. You give them an overall assignment, maybe, because you're the leader, right? But you give them some freedom within that overall assignment to develop their own way of getting it done, to do things their own way. You empower them. And when you empower them, first of all, Dad said they might surprise you. But what's happening when you empower them is they feel free. They might even feel creative. And therefore they're happier. And so they work for you naturally. There isn't that resistance. They work for you naturally. And therefore you don't need to control them, which frees you up to be creative. You can actually be a better leader, you know, because now you have time. I'm reading this book, well, I'm reading parts of it, because parts of it, to be honest, just look kind of stupid to me. Like, I don't need to read that part. But I'm reading portions of this book called How Enlightenment Changes the Brain. And one thing that I had never in my life considered, I'll share it with you, because I just thought, wow, that's a whole different perspective, and I've kind of been contemplating it since then. I can't say I've come to any conclusions, but they have, and I'm going to be sharing a little bit from this in my Sunday gathering, but not this, I don't think this particular angle. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I don't know if you can see this, I'll show you, I'll read it to you, but they have 6 levels of awareness in the human brain, and the bottom level is instinctual awareness. That is the survival-based motivation. You know, that's what sometimes, you know, you see in the movies when there's some kind of disaster and people start stealing from each other and killing each other to get food. You know, it's that lovely instinctual awareness. Above that is habitual responsiveness. And this is where we just do what we were taught to do. You know, like if you go to a movie theater in America, people stand in line. You know, you go to a movie theater in China, they don't stand in line. They're all bunched up. The difference is in kindergarten, we were taught to stand in line and they weren't. So we go and we just stand in line. You know, that's it would never occur to us to go up to the front and bunch up. But, you know, that's a habitual response. The next level of the mind is intentional decision making. And this is called language and feeling based processing and conscious goal seeking, because, you know, we've learned things so that, you know, the thinking mind that uses language is involved in the decision making. There may be thinking, well, we could do this, but this and this and this might happen, or we could do this, but this and this and this might happen. So there's language involved, but also your feelings about it are involved, right? And your goals are involved. So intentional decision making is the next level. The next level is called creative imagination, which I'm going to talk about in a second. And then the higher two levels are the spiritual levels, which I'll talk about on Sunday, self-reflective awareness and transformational awareness. So right now I want to talk about this fourth highest level called creative imagination. Creative imagination is, listen to these words, mind wandering, daydreaming, and free associative fantasies. Now, if you'll take the word guilt lightly here, I am guilty of thinking that mind wandering, daydreaming, and free associative fantasies are bad. You know, like when mind wandering kicks in, I should say the mantra or something like that and let it go. But let me share with you what these guys say, and it's causing me to maybe look at mind wandering a little differently. Decision making and goal achieving, which was level three, the level right below this level. Decision making and goal achieving is a strenuous neurological process, and the brain must take frequent breaks in order to reset its neurochemistry. Normally, this process involves the relaxation of both our body and our thought processes. And if we fail to heed the signs of fatigue, we can experience severe emotional stress. Now, they say it's essential to take hourly relaxation breaks from work, which I don't do. As you relax, some areas of your brain actually become more active, especially in your frontal lobe, and your mind begins to wander and daydream. Not only is your brain refreshing the neurochemicals needed to make decisions, it is actually engaged in creatively solving problems. It's also essential for memory formation and recall, but most important, this relaxed state of daydreaming allows you to enter the higher stages of awareness, where the path towards enlightenment often begins. Now, that is a perspective on the daydreaming, the mind wandering, that I had never considered before consciously. But then it hit me how often some kind of clarity will spontaneously arise in the shower, for example. Now, to be honest, what do you guys think I'm doing in the shower besides washing my body? I'm daydreaming, aren't I? Isn't that what you're doing in the shower? So it occurred to me that maybe I'm at least partially wrong about this daydreaming, mind-wandering thing. Maybe it's not the daydreaming and the mind-wandering itself that is a problem. It might be sometimes what we're daydreaming about or where we're letting our mind wander to. So, for example, if you're in the shower hammering over a grievance you have against somebody, that's probably not so great. But if we bring this back to what I just read from the Tao, he who has power over others can't empower himself. If you are so busy trying to control everyone else, you don't have time for that more relaxing daydreaming state. And it appears that it's in that relaxing daydreaming state that your maybe even subconscious creativity kind of kicks in, because the mind is, it's like the mind is kind of loose in daydreaming. It lets things pop through, right? And so your creativity can kick in and give you better ideas about the organization or about your job, or in our case, about our spiritual path. So again, this line says, he who has power over others can't empower himself. We need some freedom in order to empower ourselves, to be creative ourselves, and therefore to be a better leader of the organization, the household, the retreat house, you know, whatever it is that we're leading. He who clings to his work will create nothing that endures, he says. He who clings to his work will create nothing that endures. Well, cling, again, makes me think of a type of control. Before I was on the spiritual path, I was the director of a training department for the company I worked for. And I don't know how many employees I had, 10 or 12 employees that worked for me. And what these employees did is they wrote courses and taught courses. And the company would determine what courses they needed us to teach and what section of the company they needed us to teach in order to further their goals, right? But we wrote the courses and we taught the courses. But one thing I noticed with some of my course developers is they would write a course, read it, see a way to improve it, write it, read it, see a way to improve it, write it, read it, see a way to improve it. And if I didn't come in there and say, stop, you know, we have a deadline, it's got to be good enough, and take it from them, they never would have stopped. And I can see how, you know, you can kind of see that in, and although it's this isn't going to change, but you can see that in technology. You know, all software systems are always being improved. New apps are constantly being downloaded. And there's a sense to some degree, at least when I was the manager of these course developers, there's a sense that although they might be improving the course somewhat, you know, by going over it again and again and again, the truth is that improvement is not as progressive as putting that aside and going on to something completely new. Something completely different that hasn't been done yet. You know, for example, imagine if I was still writing MPP, we wouldn't have gentle healing. Right? So like, you never move forward if you keep improving that current thing that you're working on. If you keep clinging that current thing that you're working on, then new things cannot really come into manifestation. So he who clings to his work will create nothing that endures. I'm not quite sure about the nothing that endures part, but I can see how it would keep the overall effectiveness of the job from ever going in a truly useful direction. You know, if you just keep redoing the same thing over and over again, you know, you have to know when good enough is good enough and move on to something new. And then he says, if you want to accord with the Tao, just do your job, then let it go, which kind of is the other side of what I just said. You know, obviously, if you're a course writer, you don't just write the course and let it go. You do read it over once or twice. I mean, that's part of it. You read it over, you do some improvements. You might even ask somebody else to comment on it, and then you read it over again. But, you know, there comes a point when you've done that a couple of times, and this is as good as you're going to get it for now. And you put it aside and you move on to the next thing. You know, another example is retreats. You know, like I've done this natural meditation retreat, this self-inquiry retreat, and I don't know what retreats may or may not come in the future, but imagine that I did the self-inquiry retreat. I said, that was nice, but I could do it better. I did another self-inquiry retreat. Well, I learned this time. And you know what? I do learn something every time I offer it. So let me do it again, and I do another self-inquiry retreat. And whatever other retreats could also be available would never be offered. You know, so you have to know, you know, when to say that's good enough and move on. Just do your job, let it go, and move on to whatever the universe is bringing to you next. So let's see if Wayne Dyer has anything different here. If you stand on tiptoe, you cannot stand firmly. If you take long steps, you cannot walk far. So again, instead of the straddle to make yourself wider, he has long steps, which is much more like Stephen Mitchell's rushing ahead. You know, he's trying to get ahead of everyone. You're taking long steps. Showing off does not reveal enlightenment. Boasting will not produce accomplishment. He who is self-righteous is not respected. He who brags will not endure. All these ways of acting are odious, distasteful. And I don't know what odious means, so let's look that up. Extremely unpleasant or repulsive. Okay, so all of these ways of acting are odious, distasteful. They are superfluous excesses. They are like a pain in the stomach, a tumor in the body. So he really goes to, yeah, they're like chicken gizzard soup, Don says, absolutely. When walking the path of the Tao, this is the very stuff that must be uprooted, thrown out, and left behind. So that last paragraph is probably a little different. I think he went into more detail about how distasteful these ways of being are, right? He used the word odious, distasteful, superfluous excess, like a pain in the stomach and a tumor in the body. A lot more than just the one word despise. But I love this last paragraph. He says, when walking the path of the Tao, this is the very stuff that must be uprooted, thrown out, and left behind. And even though I talked about if you notice yourself doing these things, you might want to go home and do a root cause inquiry, the truth is the other two translations of the Tao didn't talk about that. He's the only one. When he says uprooted, I think that's what he means. Right? When walking the path of the Tao, this is the very stuff that must be uprooted, thrown out, and left behind. So what do I want to say about that? And we already know that root cause inquiry is a great way to uproot it. I guess a part of what I want to say is that when something is unconscious, you can't uproot it, throw it out, and leave it behind. You know, remember I talked about the habitual mind a while ago, which is learned behavior, and I gave the example of standing in line. Well, another learned behavior might be making yourself seem better than others. For example, you could have had a parent who covered up their sense of unworthiness by making themselves seem better than others. And I remember Brent Haskell once said that to a young child, to a child under 5 years old, the parent is like God. And what the parent says is true and never questioned. So if you're raised around a parent who is constantly bragging around the dinner table, you know, putting others down, talking about how much smarter they are, how much wiser they are than others, you may unconsciously learn that habit. And therefore, you could be going around putting yourself above others and not even knowing it. Probably everybody else knows it. Have you guys ever heard of the Yuhari window? It's a window with, let me see if I can find it online real quick. Let's see, I probably can. However, I don't want to lose that dog song because I want to listen to it again later. So let me open another screen. Yuhari window. Oh, so say that's not the Yuhari window, but it changed my, you know how it changes things. It changed it. Changed it to the mohair window. The wrong stuff was showing up. Okay, so here are some Yuhari windows. So let me go ahead and share my screen now. So this is the Yuhari window. There's this says the open free area, the blind area, the hidden area, and the unknown area. The open free area is what you know about yourself and what others know about you. So everybody sees it. The hidden area is what you know about yourself, but you hide it from others. The blind area is what others know about you, but you don't see it. And the unknown area is what you don't know about yourself and others don't know about themselves. So for example, if making yourself better than others is a learned habit, this could be a blind area for you, which means you don't see it, which means you can't uproot it and throw it away, right? You can't do that and leave it behind. So let me stop my share. So what this means is when someone criticizes us, instead of just being immediately offended or immediately defensive, a person on the spiritual path will look at the criticism to see if there's any truth to it. Because they know about this blind area. They know that there are things they don't know about themselves that others know. And so the only way that that's going to be brought to your attention so that you can uproot it, throw it out, and leave it behind is for someone else to bring it to your attention. And I'm now using the example, because we're talking about the 24th verse, I'm using the example of thinking you're better than others, but this could be anything. This could be your belief in lack. You're always needing to hug money close to your chest and not sharing it, you know. This could be that you're mean and nasty and impatient to other people. This could be that you use people all of the time, that you don't listen to people. I mean, it could be anything. So if someone criticizes you, even if they don't do it in a nice way, you know, they could have been repressing it, and one day you do something and they blow up, right? So it might not even be done in a nice way. It could be totally coming from their wrong mind. But that doesn't mean that there might not be truth to it. Now, the key thing there is the might not be truth to it, because there's also the possibility that they're projecting on you and seeing something that's not there. So when someone criticizes you, you have to investigate it. So returning to the specific example of the 24th verse, if someone, for example, told you that you thought you were better than others, then you need to start watching yourself to see if that's true. You need to pay attention to what you say, how you act, and how you treat others, and what you think, to see if you can find any truth to the fact that you think you're better than others. And if you do, then you can go and uproot it. You can go into the root cause inquiry, right? Then you can go and uproot it, throw it out, and leave it behind. Now, the throw it out, I think I giggle every time I say that. And the reason I giggle is because it's not always as easy as that. It's easy to say uproot it, throw it out, but it's not always as easy as that. Sometimes it is. You know, like when I saw the belief in betrayal as a false belief, like I believed in betrayal, I believed you could betray me, I believed I could betray you, I believed in betrayal, until this one moment in time. When I saw clearly that betrayal was a setup in the mind, that in order for you to betray me, first I had to define a relationship between you and me, let's say friend. I had to have rules of how friends are with each other, which I never discussed with you and we never signed a contract on. All right? But just in my own mind. And then you had to do something different, which I perceived as breaking those rules. Then you could betray me. What I saw was, if I just saw you as the free son of God and stopped there, you could never betray me. It required the definition of a relationship and rules for that type of relationship to be laid down first. The instant I saw that, I was able to throw out the belief in betrayal. I didn't have to see it twice. It was so clear to me that betrayal was something I had made up and that I did never have to make it up again. All I had to do is remember that you guys are free. And I was done with it. So sometimes it is as simple as uproot it, throw it out, and leave it behind. But that wasn't my experience with unworthiness, or what I call the I am bad thought. You know, maybe just because the root was so much deeper. It's just like if you go out in my yard, and by the way, if you have nothing else to do, please do. Because I got lots of weeds out there. But just like if you go out in my yard and you start pulling weeds, you're going to find some of those weeds just come up as easy as can be. And other weeds, you can't even pull up. You know, you put your whole body weight in and you can't pull it up. You're going to have to dig around them and dig down deep to pull them up. Well, it's the same kind of thing with beliefs. You know, some beliefs you can pull up quite easily once you see them. And then others, like Don says, has tentacles, and you can't pull them up to save your life. You really do have to dig down there to get them out. So sometimes it's just not as easy as uproot, throw out, and leave behind. Sometimes you have to uproot and uproot again and uproot again and uproot again and uproot again. But what you want to do is just keep with it until you know it's gone. Right? And then you can leave it behind. And my experience with unworthiness, I mean, maybe I could say that I uprooted it, I threw it out and left it behind. But like, I can tell you the moment that I threw out betrayal, the moment I saw, oh my God, that doesn't make sense. I can't tell you the moment that I threw out unworthiness. You know, I can tell you many, many stories that happened over a period of years, all of which I know were a part of it. But I'm not aware of that final moment when it ended. I'm just aware that one day I started noticing that you could, for example, yell at me. You know, you could be yelling at me and telling me how awful I am. And that I wasn't thinking about it from my perspective. I wasn't feeling unworthiness. I was trying very hard to listen to you and see what you were really trying to say. Like, it wasn't there. It wasn't in the way anymore. So I didn't notice the moment that it was thrown away, but you could say over the years, you know, maybe this was a root I pulled up a little at a time and kept throwing it away and kept throwing it away and kept throwing it away. I remember there was that time that I walked around and every time I saw an unworthiness thought in my own mind, a self-judgment thought, I would say to myself, not true, only belief, right? And in fact, let me just say something about this. One thing that I think doesn't work from my own experience, and if your experience is different, that's fine. But like, you know, if the thought comes up, you know, that I'm ugly, I don't find it helpful to say I'm beautiful. If the thought comes up I'm stupid, I don't find it helpful to say I'm smart, right? If the thought comes up, I'm irresponsible, I don't find it helpful to say I'm responsible. That type of denial did not work for me. What worked for me was admitting that I believed it, but that belief doesn't make it true. That, in fact, I can even feel that in my heart right now. That just feels more honest, more genuine. So like if I had the thought that I was ugly, I would look at that thought and admit that I believed it. But the fact that I believe it doesn't make it true. And if I need evidence, I mean, sure, I could find evidence that, you know, like Laurent thought I was ugly. I could find evidence I was ugly. But I could ask my mom and she thinks I'm the cutest thing alive. So apparently, there's not a fact there. It's a belief. Right? It's a perception. You know, and if something comes up that I'm stupid, you know, and maybe I feel really stupid and I can say I feel really stupid. Right now I feel very, very stupid. That's what I believe about myself right now. But it is just a belief. And in fact, if I want to take a little bit of time to look at it, I can find times when you could say I was smart. And one thing Holy Spirit once said to me, if you're both, can you be either? If I'm stupid one day, which we all are, but smart another day, which we all are, then can I really be defined as stupid or smart? Right? So I can't judge myself on either. I can't make myself better than because I'm smart, and I can't make myself less than because I'm stupid. I'm just human. Right? I'm just human. So what I did was I would admit that I believe these things, but I really looked very carefully at the difference between a belief and a fact, or a belief and a truth. Because, of course, what my mind was trying to tell me was that it was true, right? That it was a fact about me. And that's not the case. It was a belief. And it could even be somebody else's belief. Still a belief. Like I said, I can find somebody else who doesn't believe it. Laurent thinks I'm ugly. My mom thinks I'm the cutest thing alive, you know? So with those more difficult beliefs, they take longer time to kind of work it out. And so just be patient with those more difficult beliefs and take that time to work it out. Yes, Dawn?
I just have a curious question on how you would approach where I recently had, I've been doing the work on this one for a bit, and I just love all this clarity you're sharing on the belief I'm not good enough and all the tentacles of how that would spread out in the thoughts, you know, like I'm not wanted, all those, there's like these spin-off thoughts and they seem to be all connected. They're like all different flavors of the same one. So it's so funny as I dig deeper and deeper, it's just all these other things that I didn't even know that I believed are there. But what I noticed came through as never before is, okay, so the turnaround was, but this didn't work for you, but it could work for someone else moving to the turnaround and finding reasons why it could be true or as true. Yeah. So I got to the turnaround and it's, I am good enough. And then the next leap for me was, even if someone else says I'm not good enough, or even if I, whatever, you know, say something doesn't work out, or even if my son never comes back into my life, I'm still good enough, even if outer experiences or appearances or situations show up whatever way they show up. So that I feel is the clincher, because we can get to these turnarounds like I'm not, or you can get to the turnaround, I am good enough. And then life will come, like my mom will come and, hey, how you doing? Oh, by the way, and just say something that is almost verbatim of that previous belief. In some way or another, she'll make it seem, you know, you're not good enough. Like you did this wrong, you're bad, or you're mistaken. Yeah. So I think that was my recent epiphany. And I think that's where we trip ourselves up, because once we have these, the turnaround and epiphany and some clarity, and it feels really good when we believe that thought. And then we look to the world for validation. Like, am I right?
Yeah.
And I think we can't do that. I think that's the mistake.
You can't.
Yeah,
you can't look for validation because those people are screwed up.
What I came to realize is that in some way, okay, it may not show up in the way that, okay, their I am bad belief may not show up in the way that it showed up for me. Like for me, it was, I'm not good enough. Theirs may show up in a totally different way. Like I'm not wanted or nobody loves me or nobody.
Or even I'm better than others. That one.
So it could show up in all these different flavors.
Yeah.
Yet, you know, so I just wanted to say that added clarification.
And I would say, remember how I talked about our kindergarten teacher taught us to stand in line, so we stand in line. Well, you know, when your mom calls you up and starts telling you how you're not good enough, you can start saying, oh, that's where I learned it. Now I see it again. I was 5 and younger, and I just took what she said to be fact. It doesn't mean she was right. You know? So, yeah, that's where I learned it. Yeah, lots of us learn that from our caregivers. And even the best caregiver accidentally teaches it because they all get irritated sometimes. And even that irritation, even if they don't say anything, we pick up on that irritation. And we interpret that irritation to mean, I'm not good enough, right? I'm not loved. I'm not wanted. So there isn't a perfect caregiver. Most of them did not intend to teach it to us. I'm not going to say none of them did because some may have. Some of them may have tried to make themselves feel better by making you feel low. But then I always say we were there like sponges ready to learn it. You know, like if you read Bernadette Roberts, her mother gave her the same messages and she argued with her mother about it. I'm not bad. At age 2, she wouldn't buy into it. She never did. And she said by age 7 or 8, her mother gave up, you know, because she, so we were willing to believe it. And they, because they're imperfect, couldn't help but teach it. And with that said, I'm going to let go of the mic because I've gone a minute over. Thanks, you guys, for putting up with me for another day.